Hello, friends. This is Psalm 74, a song from the ruins, a song sung through tears, a deep and heart-wrenching lament. Oh, God, why have you rejected us forever? Verse 3 gives us the setting. The psalmist writes his lament from the utter destruction that occurred in Jerusalem when King Nebuchadnezzar invaded in 586 BC and laid waste to God's temple. A dark day, yet it did not come without warning. Isaiah warned, then Jeremiah, then Ezekiel. God warned of destruction, yet the stubborn hearts of God's people would not listen. Now it is upon them, and it feels permanent. Back in verse 1, O God, why have you rejected us forever? Why does your anger smolder against the sheep of your pasture? Now we know God has not rejected his people forever. But remember, respect the poet's feelings. He feels rejected forever. Put yourself in his place. Look around at the devastation. This is the place where God met with them, where he dwelt among them. They worshiped here. They heard from God here. Now it's gone. The ruin is everywhere. From his vantage point, God gave up on them. He looks at the ruins and feels the anger of God smoldering like fire, as if God himself hurled brimstone to burn it all down. Read Ezekiel 9 and you'll see why God was angry. The Lord told Ezekiel, "The sin of the people of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great. The land is full of bloodshed, and the city is full of injustice." God promised to bring their evil down on their own heads. And here in Psalm 74, he's done it. Now the psalmist's faith is shaken to the core, but that core remains. Verse 2, "Remember the nation you purchased long ago, the people of your inheritance, whom you redeemed, Mount Zion, where you dwelt." He calls God to remember. But yet, God never forgets. So what does this mean? It means that he's remembering. And even though God always remembers, it still means a lot to invite God to remember with you. Remember who we are, Lord. Remember that you bought us. You redeemed us. We're yours, and you dwelt here with us. Yet God could say the same in return. You were redeemed. You were set free, but you abused that freedom. Yet God does not speak up here. So in verse 3, the psalmist continues, "Turn your steps toward these everlasting ruins, all this destruction the enemy has brought on the sanctuary." Interesting phrasing, turn your steps. It's as if he's walking through the ruins and inviting God to walk with him. I want you to see what I'm seeing, God. Sort of like a local first responder taking the president on a tour through the aftermath of tragedy. Look at this. These everlasting ruins. All this destruction. We need help. Have you ever done that? Given God a little walking tour through your own chaos? I have, many times. Now, the details in my life are not always so dramatic, but when I feel overwhelmed, I like to go walk and pray. And as we walk together, I just lay it all out. You see this, Lord? I need help. As the psalmist gives God the tour, he recounts what happened. Verse 4, "Your foes roared in the place where you met with us. They set up their standards as signs. They behaved like men wielding axes to cut through a thicket of trees. They smashed all the carved paneling with their axes and hatchets. They burned your sanctuary to the ground. They defiled the dwelling place of your name." The psalmist's story reads like flashbacks of invasion. He struggles to make sense of it all. They walked in as if they were just a crew of men chopping down trees to make a clearing, hacking away with hatchets and burning what's left. But this is your sanctuary, God, your dwelling place. Your name was honored here. How does this make sense? And in verse 8, "They said in their hearts, 'We will crush them completely.' They burned every place where God was worshipped in the land." That's it. It's all gone. Nothing left. Not one place of worship remains unburned. Now, the psalmist's bewilderment is understandable, but we must also remember that the places of worship were defiled by sin and bloodshed long before the invasion. That worship was a thin veil to hide their godlessness, and God had enough of it. God warned many times. He sent prophets, signs, warnings. But now, those words are all gone. In verse 9, "We are given no signs from God. No prophets are left, and none of us knows how long this will be." Have you ever been overwhelmed by God's silence? Looking over the ruins, the psalmist feels the Lord's silence in his bones. No signs, no prophets, no answers. In Amos 8, God warns his people who trample on the needy and sell the poor like sandals that he will bring a famine on the land. Not a famine of food or a thirst for water, but a famine of hearing the words of the Lord. People will stagger, searching for the word of the Lord, but they will not find it. Now in Psalm 74, the psalmist lives in that devastating reality, and he wants to know how long. Now God told them exactly how long in Jeremiah's prophecy, 70 years, but the people didn't listen. And now it feels like forever. And what is God doing? In verse 11, "Why do you hold back your hand, your right hand? Take it from the folds of your garment and destroy them." It feels like God just has his hands stuck in his pockets. "Do something, Lord." But in verse 12, the tone changes. Now the psalmist begins to remember. "But God is my king from long ago. He brings salvation on the earth." For the psalmist, this is all personal, and God is personal. "God is my king from long ago. It was you who split open the sea by your power. You broke the heads of the monster in the waters. It was you who crushed the heads of Leviathan and gave it as food to the creatures of the desert. It was you who opened up springs and streams. You dried up the ever-flowing rivers. The day is yours, and yours also the night. You established the sun and moon. It was you who set all the boundaries of the earth. You made both summer and winter." Suddenly, his eyes are off of the ruins and planted firmly back on God. It was you. He looks back and remembers God's faithfulness and power. Now, the psalmist reminding God of his own works reads for me a little bit like Chris Farley interviewing Paul McCartney in that old SNL sketch. "Remember that time when you were in the Beatles? That was awesome." Of course, Paul McCartney remembers the Beatles, and of course, God remembers his own works. But for the psalmist and for us, it is a powerful thing to remember God's works with him. Some readers get some wild ideas as to what the Leviathan references is all about. I have no idea, but whatever happened, it was awesome. And then in verse 18, he calls God to remember what just happened. "Remember how the enemy has mocked you, Lord." And in the final stanza, he asks God to remember going forward. In verse 19, "Do not forget the lives of your afflicted people forever. Have regard for your covenant, because haunts of violence fill the dark places of the land. Do not let the oppressed retreat in disgrace. May the poor and needy praise your name." Did you catch that? Now the psalmist is concerned for the poor and needy, for the oppressed. It was Israel's mistreatment of the oppressed that got them here. They forgot their covenant with God. They forgot God's call to justice and compassion. But now, this Israelite remembers, and he brings God in to remember with him, which God, once again, already does. But remembering together is powerful. And in verse 22, "Rise up, O God, and defend your cause. Remember." Read Psalm 74 and take some time to remember what God remembers.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.